This is the best of two pros and a cup of Joe with LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, and Jonas Knox on Fox Sports Radio.
Right when everybody thought, we don't got to worry about them anymore.
Write them off.
We don't got to worry about them anymore. The Patriots are back, baby. My Patriots are back. Bill Belichick is back.
Patriots.
Hey, I've been riding that horse all year long. I told you.
Well, yeah, you're definitely riding it.
Bill Belichick's infatuation with big running backs and big running backs with dreadlocks? You ever notice that? That man loves him some big-ass running backs with dreadlocks.
Some LeGarrette Blount,
Who else did he have? It's been a few.
Yeah, he,
been a few. I'd have to do the homework on it, but
when they do a documentary on his career after it's all said and done, and they talk about just his genius and his coaching a bit, like, this is going to be one of the games they point to, right? To where he just went in and figured a way out, attempting three passes and winning on the road in a huge division game on Monday night in those conditions. Just awesome.
They put everybody on notice.
Awesome.
I'll tell you that.
They can win in a variety of ways. Like, that's what makes them so dangerous, is they walk into any game and it doesn't matter the conditions. Like, weather conditions can be the ultimate equalizer. Like, I sat in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and when the snow started coming down, the wind started to pick up, the temperature dropped, I was like, you know, this isn't good for a team like Ohio State that's got a quarterback who likes to throw the football around and really hasn't played in these sort of conditions. And lo and behold, what happened? Michigan ran all over them. Like, I just witnessed that firsthand 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
And this was the same thing. And I've played in games like this. Now, in Cleveland, in Buffalo, there were some cold games. There was a couple windy games. Nothing with the combination of what we saw last night. But in Cleveland, there was a game we played against Pittsburgh. And, man, that wind was whipping. And it was freezing out there. Very similar, where we had to adjust everything we were going to do basically to run the football, throw a little bit when we had the wind going a certain direction, and that was it. But that's the thing about this Patriots team that makes them so dangerous, is I don't care who they play the rest of the year, and especially if they're going to have the number one overall seed in the AFC, that there's a likelihood that may happen in Foxborough in the playoffs. So you might have to play in that. They know how to play in it. They know how to win in it.
I'll tell you what. The defensive scheme, as a defensive-minded guy, that defensive scheme was tremendous. They got him off his mark. They got him uncomfortable. They boxed him in. It was almost like it was a Mike Vick defensive game plan. You know, you stunt to the inside, you force the double teams, and then you stunt outside of the inside stunt. So in other words, in layman's terms, the outside guys in the defense were forcing double teams on the offensive linemen. The offensive linemen were basically making sure that they got the inside guy. The inside guy is always considered to be the most dangerous guy. The closest guy to the quarterback is the most dangerous guy to the quarterback. So now you're stemming out and you're maintaining the contain. All they did was force Buffalo to play in a phone booth in last night's game, and were actually good enough and physical enough to do it. That's the thing about it. That's what really shocked me. I think I knew their defense was pretty good. I've been big. I mean, Judon has been a grown-ass man out there. I learned last night how good they are up front with the way they move, and how efficient. And listen, with McCourty and them back there, I know that their secondary has struggled at times, but schematically speaking, if they're able to do what they were able to do last night up front, it makes it easier for their secondary to be able to be, you know, more effective in the passing game, because the quarterback is basically under duress. So I'll tell you what, I give New England on defense a ton of credit for the way that they approach that game plan against the Buffalo Bills.
Was Buffalo's ineffectiveness more to do with the weather or more to do with what the Patriots were doing? Because
it's all part of it, right?
Because the reason I asked that is Belichick came out this week and he was just effusive with his praise of Josh Allen. You know, you can't fool him with stuff. His development, his growth, like over-the-top complimentary. And I just wonder if Belichick really felt confident going into this game. Like, I got something for him. Like, I got something for him. And then seeing the conditions the way that they were just played into all of it.
If you're looking at the way they had their defensive front aligned, I mean, at times they would bring secondary guys. They would switch it up. They changed up coverages. I think that Belichick, knowing what the weather was going to be, dialed up, you know, him and his coaching staff dialed up a game plan that was purely based off of do not allow them to get the edges. Keep them inside. Keep Allen inside. Keep the run game inside. Keep everything inside. And that's what they did. I mean, you got to execute. But they executed. And I think that that's where the confidence came from, Brady.
I got to be honest with you. I thought we might see Josh Allen carry the football like 20 times. Just with those conditions and everything else, I thought that was their best chance of having some effectiveness running the football. Because I think it was both. I think it was the weather and the fact that it was going to force Buffalo to run the football more than they want to. I think they've gotten away from it last year than into this year, where they're really not a run-first team. They're a pass-first team. And it wasn't all on Josh Allen. I mean, Stephon Diggs had a drop for a touchdown. You could make the case Dawson Knox could have had another one that would have been tight. I mean, there were a number of throws that, like, we all think that when there's wind like that, it only puts pressure on the quarterbacks and kickers or punters. No, it makes it harder for receivers, too. I mean, that's the hardest part of the job is they're trying to pick up that football in those sorts of conditions where, especially if it's, like, snowy and it's hard to pick the ball up out of the quarterback's hand. But then once you do, now that thing's moving like it's a curveball or it's a slider. I mean, it becomes harder to catch because the wind's inevitably going to move it. So, you know, I think it was both. I think it was no doubt the scheme. I mean, credit the Patriots for what they did. But if that's a calm 40-degree wind at 5-mile-an-hour day, let's be real.
Like, it may be different.
I don't care what scheme. Yeah, I don't care what scheme they put out there, though. Buffalo's going to play that game different. They, unfortunately, because of the win, because of the conditions, had to play a game that they don't excel at.
So yeah. The Diggs drop for the touchdown, because they were talking about, you know, the ball was moving, but it hit him in the forearm when he was trying to make the grab and he was trying to adjust to it. So that's a really tough catch in those conditions, correct?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, it's – again, you could have seen in warm-ups. I don't know if you saw any of the warm-up shots pregame. Guys were just throwing the ball up in the air and then trying to get a feel for how the wind's going to move it. If you ever play in that stadium, though, you know it could be a swirling wind. Like, the wind can change in there, too. So it's a really tough stadium to get a feel for as a quarterback and for as a kicker, let alone, you know, being a receiver or someone who's out there trying to, you know, haul in some of those deeper passes or passes further downfield.
I always say, as a coach, we all have the same conditions we got to play in.
Yeah.
So I look
There's
at you,
coach talk.
I'm gonna look at you in your eyes, and I'm gonna be like, "Hey, look here.
Say it.
They got the same wind you do. They have the same weather conditions that you do. So either we are going to execute what our game plan is, and we're going to execute it where we can come away with this victory, or we're going to allow for the conditions to dictate our outcomes. And so to me, I looked at a team last evening that was not able to and mind you, at home.
Yeah.
You should have had the advantage. You should have known what you needed to do more so. And here's my thing, and I would ask you this, Brady. Once you realized that New England's game plan on defense was to stack the box and to make sure you were not able to gain the perimeter of the defense, I mean, you got to adjust your offensive scheme, right? You got to have, like, to me, you got to run things that are creating, you know, opportunity within the center of the field, whether it be screens to the center. Like, those are obsolete You know, people don't run center screens anymore. You know, talking about possibly doing, you know, flare passes. Maybe the only way you would have been able to get access to the outside or the perimeter of the defense was to throw, you know, quick swing passes, different things like that. I just didn't see the adjustment that gave them the opportunity to kind of switch things up with New England.
And to Brady's point, Josh Allen only had 6 carries. So they as a team, they had 25 on the night, and New England had 3
total passes. He didn't have the space. He only had 6 carries. He didn't have the space to run.
But when he got out there, he seemed like he was the most productive back they had.
Here's what I'd say is you can find ways of getting to the edge. I don't care what a defense does. You can find ways of getting to edges, finding cutoff points, pinning, pulling, finding ways of attacking an edge too. And it didn't seem like Buffalo had a plan where they cared quite as much. But you can formationally find ways of getting to edges. I don't care if it equates to like unbalanced formations where I'm going to literally take and go tackle over and put an eligible tight end on one side, force your front to have to adjust, and now I've got an eligible receiver at the tackle spot who's a tight end on the other side. Like, there's little wrinkles and things you can do to find ways of getting the defense to either figure out how they want to align to it or figure out ways to get to shorter edges. And obviously with Josh Allen, you can do a lot of things. He's athletic. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's a speed option at an edge, things like that, to just kind of kick the ball or just get it to the perimeter out in space. Like, that's why, I mean, this was probably the biggest surprise to me was the over-under never really changed. I mean, I was looking at this thinking anyone who's seeing this, like these pregame conditions, should be thinking to themselves, I'm going to hammer the under here. Like, there's no doubt about it. Like, there's no way you're going to see a bunch of scoring in this. And it kind of held intact for the most part. Like, I'm shocked this thing didn't get hammered down to like somewhere at 36 points. It stayed at 40. And it's still, I mean, there was never even a chance it was going to be that close to it. So Look, the wind conditions obviously played to me a huge, huge factor in the outcome of the game. What ended up being now where Bill Belichick's back, man. He's back.
I love it, man.
It's something. I don't know if anyone loves it because they're so tired of seeing it. And the worst part is now they're doing it. It's like he could coach for another decade with Mac Jones and what they have.
I'll tell you, the interesting thing about New England was they accessed the outsides of the Buffalo defense. They went either inside tackle or they went off tackle. They overloaded and they got to the perimeters of the defense running the ball. They grinded it out. They came out there with the idea that they were going to grind it out and get to the outsides of the Buffalo Bills defense. They either overloaded with pullers or they went straight to it. They went straight wide handoffs. Take this handoff, get what you can get to the outside. And it worked.
Yeah.
I mean, one team executed, one team didn't.
What a fun watch, man, just with the conditions and all that. By the way, probably not necessary to have the pregame crew out there with those wins. Looked like Susie Colbert was going to get blown off her chair at one point. I mean, good Christ. They've got Alex Smith throwing a fade route to Randy Moss. I mean, what are we doing
here? Yeah, that thing got – it looked like it was a tumbleweed.
It's like a dog took a bite out of a Nerf football and he's trying to complete it. Like, what are we doing here? We don't need all that. You can show off your cleats elsewhere.
I'm just glad they showed the anchor bar. That's all. I was just happy they showed that.
Did they show that? I actually didn't see that part.
Oh, you didn't see that?
No, I didn't see that part. Oh, yeah, well, I'm not unfamiliar with that. You know, I'm just unfamiliar with that.
Belichick had on that blue hoodie, though.
Yeah, he did.
He did.
Yeah. Very stylish, by the way, afterwards. He's going with this new.
Did you see that bubble coat?
Yeah.
He had a little bubble coat.
Yeah, a little stylish there.
He has to, man.
Yeah.
He's trying to keep up with Brady.
When it's cold like that, you can't think about fashion. You just got to go straight for whatever is warm, all right?
That was a pretty fashionable bubble coat.
Was Mac Jones wearing scuba suit? He was wearing a scuba suit under his shoe?
Yeah. Is it a scuba suit or just a wetsuit?
I don't know. Who knows? Somebody said scuba. Suit, right? Yeah, who cares?
Yeah. What's the difference?
It sounds like you said scuba, man.
Well, yeah, because I read it said scuba.
Scuba.
I don't know. I'm not a scuba diver. I don't really
surf. You got to stay away from scuba instructors, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because when you come back to come pick them up, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're on the boat with your chick doing scuba diving.
Are you for scuba Ruben?
Ruben, you know.
So like a long Cam Paul.
It was just a hippo.
Keep your snorkel to yourself.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific. On Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
The Oregon Ducks, they are looking around going, all right, so now what?
Because Duck Goose?
Mario Cristobal is
Miami?
Yeah, he's got a Miami man.
Family issues, though.
Yeah, that's true. And that is legitimate. His mom is sick.
Okay.
And so he's going there.
But there's other family issues taking place as well.
And then Kayvon Thibodeau has decided, that bowl game, going to go ahead and pass.
Oh.
Your season for that reason.
And Manny Diaz is not happy. He feels, the way the whole hiring process was handled is not right. But he's okay with, telling Temple yes and then 18 days later taking the Miami job. But never mind all that. We move on from stories of 2 years ago. The hiring process, it was a weird one, but it felt like, Brady, this is the way this was going to go. And it was just a matter of time before they moved on.
Let me be real with you guys. They were trying to move on from Manny Diaz last year, and they didn't find a candidate that really motivated them enough to move. No different than Southern Cal with Clay Helton, who was sniffing around a bunch of head coaches, Urban Meyer in particular, that they wanted to move on to, but they couldn't get anyone to commit to that job. So this had been in the making for a while. Manny Diaz couldn't have been surprised by this. The crazy part about how this whole thing is orchestrated, it's not the fact that Mario Cristobal was out recruiting and all these rumors started to surface. We saw that for the past 10 days in college football. What was crazy is the fact that they fired their athletic director, Blake James, and they really hadn't officially hired their athletic director. Dan Radovich, I believe is his name, from Clemson, is now going to become their AD, but they had already selected who they wanted as the head coach first. And those negotiations were already ongoing, so they really were putting the head coach before the athletics director, which is who the head coach is going to have to kind of answer to, even though ultimately when you get a ten-year, $80 million contract, the head coach answers to pretty much no one. He just has to succeed, and he'll be fine. So that was more of the oddity to this situation, that Miami knew the coach they wanted. It made sense. There was mutual interest. Mario wanted to get back down because of his family ties and some personal situations going on. But I got to tell you, man, this lends me to think that he will be able to bring the U back. And I also think it's a bad look for the Pac-12, only because I know Lincoln's going to Southern Cal and, he'll be able to turn that thing around relatively quick. But you just lost a guy who helped make Oregon kind of back into a, I don't want to say a national contender, but into the national conversation this year. And since he's gotten there with the way he recruited, now he's taken those skills to South Florida. And you can say whatever you want about Southern California, what Lincoln Riley's going to do there. If Mario Cristobal keeps all the talent just in Broward and Dade County alone,
forget about it.
The UM will be back.
Yeah.
It'll be back. And people are going to be like, where'd this come from? No, it's been a sleeping giant for a while. They just needed someone to tap into it and stop letting all these kids out of South Florida. Per capita, hands down, the most talent in the country. It's not even close. People talk about, people plucking talent out of Southern California. It is all over the state of Florida being plucked. And if you look at how the state's actually, if you cut out kind of the recruiting map, how it's designed, you kind of got Gainesville, Florida State, and Miami.
There you go.
And they all kind of recruit their own area. Mm-hmm. But if those schools could just keep all that talent in the Tampa area, in the Miami, Dade, Broward, like those areas, if they could just keep that intact in the Jacksonville area, like they would all be successful again. And I think that's what they're all aiming to do at this point moving forward. So I'm telling you, give it a year or two. You will be back. They're not that far off right now, and they're in an easy ACC with Clemson as the only team to really compete with.
Pitt, I'm not – well,
Is Pitt in the ACC? Didn't they just win the ACC?
Yeah.
Pitt did this year, but Pickett moves on. Addison moves on. A bunch of players from that team will move on. They'll have to reload.
They seem to do pretty good reloading, though. They always have talent.
Against the Miami team that hasn't been what it is.
Yeah, I'm not going to give them Snellenberger yet. I don't know that they're going to rope it off because recruiting has drastically changed. And you're right. It is a hotbed, and people are going to go in there, and they're going to pillage the area. Like they're just going to take the top recruits in, and they're going to go to different schools in different areas. You know, when I was coming up, you know, we didn't come out of Virginia. As far as we would go is North Carolina, South Carolina for teams like, you know, Penn State. And now you take a look. And it's a real culture shock. And it's funny because a lot of the things that, you know, James Franklin has, and not to try to make it about Penn State, but just to give you an idea of why it's going to be difficult for Chris Ball to be able to, you know, rope off the area and keep those recruits there, is you're talking about cultural shocks, but people are beginning to adapt and to adjust. To see somebody come up and just take this for what it's worth at face value, to see a kid come to Penn State and play ball and has dreadlocks, culture shock. To see a kid with gold fronts, culture shock, right? People are sitting there and they're like, holy S. Like, this is Penn State football, right? So now it's becoming more and more understood and people are learning that you don't need to judge people off of their appearance. The kid has good grades. The kid went through clearinghouse. The kid is a good kid, comes from a good family. Maybe he didn't come from a good family, but the kid brings a value. You are dealing with schools that are going to do that. University of Virginia. Virginia Tech just got Brent Pry. So Brent Pry is going to go down there. You're talking about Mac at Carolina. Like, it's going to be very difficult to rope that place off and say, we're keeping our kids here and they're not going anywhere. And now this NIL stuff, like, I know Miami has money because it's a privately, you know, funded school. I get all that. But you ain't going to hold off all of these major programs
just
on
wait.
What they're going to be.
If you want to make that statement about Southern Cal, you better make it about South Florida. Because I'll promise you this, some of these kids don't want to leave.
I don't think.
But they feel like they have to leave.
You're right, and you're right. And Southern Cal is the same exact way. That's why you just saw Alabama take Georgia and woodshed them with a California quarterback, a Pasadena kid. Yeah. All right? You just saw, we see that Clemson has a California kid. There's California kids. Put it to you like this. Talent-wise, like skill, you're not going to find any better skill kids than Florida kids and Southern California kids. When you start getting into like linemen and stuff like that, then you're going into different areas. But the bottom line to me is, who is offering the best opportunities to these kids as they're coming out? It could be Texas A&M. It could be Texas Longhorns. It could be anybody at this point. It's just based on what the best opportunity is that's presenting itself. I think this NIL thing is going to make things a little bit more complex for places like a Broward County. If you know about Broward and you know about Liberty City and you know about all those different areas, let me tell you something. Offer them parents $1,000 a month. Oh, yeah. Go ahead. It's good.
Well, I mean, it's already right. been – Well, it's already existed in the recruiting cycle.
True.
You know, we've already seen it for a year.
But now you don't got to hide it.
Well, that's true, but you didn't have to hide it for the past year. The difference is now you've got a guy who knows how to get that done. Mm-hmm. Like the $80 million they're spending on Mario, that's one thing. There needs to be another amount of money swinging in that's going to be allocated towards players for all that, which, again, it's a new landscape. We see, for example, a guy like – because here's the reality. The university can't have any tie to the money being shelled out for name, image, and likeness.
Mm-hmm.
Those are separate deals, so they really can't facilitate or be a part of any of that. Much like Quinn Ewers, who got paid a good amount. Well, no, that's for real. Like,
it's still air quotes because it's not air quotes.
It's not. That's actually law. Like that's right. not even up for debate. That's a law.
I get it.
The problem is you got a guy like Quinn Ewers, who's one of the top recruits.
Oh man,
he goes to Ohio State And then he really just reclassified and left early to get paid. That was all it was about. Like, it was only about money. Ohio State didn't want him to come a year earlier than he should have. Not only does it make their quarterback room a little uncomfortable, but the timing of all of it and his eligibility doesn't work, but he wanted to do it for his own sake and money. And that's fine, but that doesn't mean it's going to work out at that school. So, look, NIL's NIL. Like, we could talk about like it's going to have a huge impact, and it will for some kids. Ultimately, what's going to have the biggest impact is if Miami comes back and has a chance of winning a national championship. If they're playing the ACC championship next year, if they're playing for a spot in the college football playoff, that's where the U is back. That's where you're going to see all these kids then stay and not want to leave and want to be a part of what will be a big party in South Florida.
I just want there to be a little bit of patience because, look, we've seen when Jim Harbaugh, guy who alma mater, goes back there and, you know, takes a program that was down and out and gives them double-digit win seasons like 3 or 4 years or whatever it was. And, yeah, they struggled in the bowl games and he wasn't beating his rivals, but he did turn the program around. People were still bitching and moaning. Well, no, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. I just wonder, what's the leash going to be like with Mario Cristobal? Because he's won a national title there. He was all Big East as an offensive lineman there. He's got deep Miami roots because he's from there, family there, everything. I just wonder what it's going. How long until people are going to look around and go, all right, we need to see results now before they realize, man, this program has been a disaster for a while. I mean, that Miami-Florida State game was a joke.
But still, even with Harbaugh, he'll get 1 or 2 years of grace after winning the Big Ten. And then they're going to go right back to the same exact conversations. You got to beat Michigan. You got to win the Big Ten. Like, it's never going to end in terms of the intensity of what the fan bases and the boosters and the schools are going to want and expect and demand. You're giving out $100 million contracts now. You're giving out. You've taken the money to a whole nother place.
If you look at Mario Cristobal's roster at Oregon, and a lot of people say it's one of the, you know, he's one of the great recruiters in football. It's majority Midwest left, so it's literally just West Coast guys. So he figured out how to recruit that side of the country. I think he already knows this side. So if he can lure some even bigger recruits from that side and bring them over to Miami, like if you're playing football in Texas or you're playing in New Mexico or you're a guy up in Oregon that he's already been talking to. I mean, you're telling me you wouldn't be interested in playing at Miami?
All I'm going to say is this. It sounds good. Like, I hear the excitement. I appreciate it. But you're not going to just sell these recruits on Miami based off of the history of Miami. That's not going to work. You're not going to just sell them on South Beach. It's not going
to
work.
Gift cards to the Clevelander.
I'll tell you what.
Done deal.
I spent an entire time rehabbing in Coral Gables. They have a whole lot of work to do facility-wise if they think that they're going to start getting all the top recruits to stay there.
What years were that?
I mean, it's been a while, but I mean, I've seen the place.
They already redid their indoor. I mean, they've done facility upgrades.
I've seen the facility upgrades. It's not on the level of these major, like Clemson or even Michigan or, heck, even Penn State as far back as we are.
Michigan really hasn't changed much of what they had.
It's already extraordinary. It's pretty extraordinary. Look at USC.
It's good, but it has to be that way when you live in a cold weather
climate. That's correct. That's correct. But it's still there.
I don't know that ultimately entices kids. They want a chance to play in the NFL and play for a national championship.
Yeah.
I just, it is.
And Miami isn't
in
that conversation right now.
But
exactly.
It does make them interesting again, correct?
I don't know yet.
I mean, I do. I think, look, when we grew up.
Greg Schiano made it interesting, and he didn't get it done.
Who was my other guy that went there from Temple?
He was the guy that made it interesting.
Golden.
There we go.
From BC, right?
When did Schiano go to Miami?
Yeah, I meant Golden.
Was Schiano his defensive coordinator?
He was never there.
No.
Right. I meant Al Golden.
Well, listen. Yeah.
They kind of ran together on me.
Golden, Schiano. I make that mistake.
They're both Penn Staters.
Listen, yeah.
Hey, there was a little bias there.
Of course there was.
You needed a Penn State guy to make Miami great again.
Schiano may have been there like 20 years ago as like a DC. He never was a head coach.
Yeah, I think he was there.
I think it was a DC. I don't think he was ever a head coach.
Yeah, I think he was.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Hushmanzada and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Marcus Freeman, it does feel like genuine excitement.
It does.
And it feels different than it's felt in the past when they've made head coaching hirings. When Brian Kelly went there, I remember more of people at Cincinnati being pissed about how he left than I do people being really excited about him going to Notre Dame.
Is it overcompensating? Is that where you're getting
to? Well, no, it does feel different. And I wonder, is that because he's so well-liked, he's such a good recruiter, and he's got such a good reputation? Or is this because they feel burned by the way this was handled by Brian Kelly, and now it's a rallying cry for the program, and they're going to build on this from here?
I don't think it has anything to do with Brian. I mean, they haven't made this big of a deal about a head coaching hire even before Brian. I mean, it wasn't like that for Charlie Weiss. It wasn't like that for Ty Willingham. And so I think it has more to do with the times. I think it has more to do with their excitement about what he brings. I mean, look, he's a very, very impressive young man. Like, I remember the first time, and I've obviously known Marcus a little bit because he was an Ohio State guy and just through the kind of the football world, but getting a chance to sit down with him back when Notre Dame was, you know, getting ready to play Wisconsin, I had a chance to kind of sit there and listen to him and just talk with him and converse. And I'm like, damn, dude, this guy sounds like a head coach. Like right then and there, I was like, I don't know what he's going to do after this year as a defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. But after going from Cincinnati to Notre Dame and having the success that he had this year, he was going to be a head coach. Like, he was going to have those opportunities this year somewhere else. And I think very similar to, but a little different situation how it came about. But you could say Bob Stoops with Lincoln Riley, Urban Meyer and Ryan Day. Like, the university knew what they had in Marcus. And they were like, you know, this is the best guy for our situation and for right now. He's just genuine. He connects with players. Yeah, he's a great recruiter, but he's a great coach too. I mean, you could see the way that defense developed and got better over the course of the year. And that had a lot to do with just the way he connects with those young men. So there's a lot of excitement, and rightfully so, because of everything he brings. But look, are there going to be some growing pains? Of course. It's a huge job.
Yeah, I mean, I was about to ask, is it too big for him?
No. I don't think it's too big for him. I just think he's going to learn over the course of his time there. I mean, hell, even a 50-year-old head coach who's been, even Brian Kelly, as successful as he was at times, he still had to learn and go through some tough cycles. You know, he still had to kind of adapt and change and grow over that. So regardless of how experienced you are, you know, you still have to continue to grow and adapt and change, and that's going to be part of it. But look, with Tommy Reese coming back, Mike Elston coming back, a lot of those pieces are kind of back in place for them. They just have to finish out the rest of the staff so they can take away some of the pressure of him having to do that defensive coordinator job and head coaching job, right? Like, it's you wear many hats when you're the head coach for any college football program, let alone Notre Dame. Now it comes down to how they can diffuse and take off some of those responsibilities off his plate to let him do what he does best and let him lead that school.
Mm. Yeah, it's going to be fun to see how that all plays out. But I'm pulling for him. Listen, you did a fine job there. Were you nervous at all having to talk in front of Notre Dame like that back on campus? Or?
You know what's funny about like those situations? When you're an MC or a host for an event, it's all downside. Like, it's not about you. It's Marcus's day. It's our athletic director, Jack Swarbrick's day, or our president, Father Jenkins. Like, it's all about them and them speaking. Like, I swear to God, I got there and they're like, all right, here's the script. And I said, oh, I was like, well, what is this kind of the run of show? And they're like, yeah, I go, well, this kind of seems a little out of order. Why don't we do this? And they're like, oh, you know, that's not going to work trying to make a change or audible this late. I was like, yeah, it's fine. I was like, I'm just, I, let's just, let's just go forward with it as planned. I don't care how it looks or whatever else. So,
well, listen, didn't get rise and roll in, but you did a fine job. And now Notre Dame, be a fun watch.
I'm a big NDfan, man. You know, Ray Zellers is one of my – I probably told you guys this. I grew up in the same area as Ray Zellers.
Really?
And he's one of my heroes growing up. Ended up being my teammate for a time in Washington. And I was just a big fan. And then and Jerome Bettis was my mentor. We had the same barber. He used to drive me around. I had some of my most amazing moments as a youth hanging out with Jerome Bettis. So
he's the most likable guy,
bro. I've been a big ND fan. It was one of the schools that I thought about going to. Irons. We came out the same
Grant.
Year. And I'll tell you what, Grant was one of the coolest dudes, and I actually thought about, because he played outside backer, I actually was thinking, maybe I might go to ND to be a linebacker, and me and him would be, just the duo type deal, because, guys like going to schools together and stuff like that, so I'm pulling for it. I've always been a fan, because, I think that the class of Notre Dame, I've always said, Penn State and Notre Dame have always been really – cool to me.
It's just tradition.
Yeah,
man.
The tradition of it all. So.
Yeah, it's and I've always wanted to go on campus there. I want to see and look, Joel Klatt even said it last week when we talked to him, and Klatt's like, look, I didn't want to like Notre Dame. I didn't, and then you went and visited and he's like, God, this place is awesome. Mm. Just one of those places, it would be a lot of fun to go there. If only we knew somebody who had some pull that could get us maybe show from there.
Well, the tough part is, LeVar, is some people don't like to travel. Yeah.
Or they wouldn't be able to travel because they have their own show.
That's a good point.
Right, and that's part of it.
We could go two fists, double fists while he's doing the show, leave that up to the O brothers.
All right, I'll make you guys a deal. I'll allow you to listen to my radio show on Saturday while you're traveling. How about that?
Oh, thanks for that.
Yeah, no problem.
Maybe make sure you send the link.
Maybe give you a shout out. All right, this is unbelievable. By the way,
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.